Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent Breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from an undisclosed location, this is Real Spoilers, episode 189, which is a shame Joe's not here because it's a milestone.
Wow.
It's a shame.
The old 189.
Old 189. He's been looking forward to 189. He calls it 189er.
189er.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So anyway, on that note, let's go around the table and people can introduce themselves.
This is Dan.
This is Michael.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Michael's back.
I'm back.
Your movie... told us about last time.
I was just going to say, yeah, the last time I was on here, I was plugging a film that I was in the midst of finishing and with Kevin over here, and we finally finished it, and I'm really happy with it.
Yeah.
It just got accepted into the St. Louis Filmmaker Showcase.
If we had one of those fancy soundboard things, we would play the sound effects of applause right now.
Yeah, a bunch of people. Yeah in the sound bunker down here. There's so many people applauding.
Well, our live studio audience.
Yes.
Yeah, we just need to get that sign that turns on. We don't have the sign yet.
We'll be like the Alan Havey show, the audience of one. Do you remember that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was a
good
show.
Performed for one person.
He had a show on Comedy Central back when it first started, and he did a thing every night where it was an audience of one, and he would just bring in, there was one chair, like it looked like a chair from like a theater, and
yeah.
It was just one chair roped off, and like there would be one person sitting in there watching.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he was funny. And you, Alan Havey, did you watch Mad Men?
Yeah.
He was the guy that ended up leaving because he wanted to make his own cartoon, his own comic strip.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Alan Havey.
Okay.
He's actually a really funny comedian.
Okay,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird to see him on that show because he plays
such a...
Yeah. It was like, that guy looks really familiar.
Yeah. Now, yeah. As soon as he watched, I was like, it's Alan Havey. What, up all night. What's going on? That's crazy. So, anyway.
Yeah.
There's your first walk down old-timey reference memory lane. I told you, Kevin, the older you get... We were talking the other day, and he was like, you asked me about a Chaplin documentary.
Yeah, I was trying to find a good documentary on Chaplin, and I looked on Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, and really none of them have any for free streaming. There was a bunch you could buy, and I was like, surely the streaming services have one solid documentary.
Yeah.
So I just watched City Lights again.
Gotcha. There's an American Masters episode from PBS that was like 2 hours long.
Yeah,
it's really good. But
there's the Robert Downey Jr. film.
Yeah, one Chaplin thing you can get. Well, some of his movies are on there.
Yeah, right.
His actual movies.
I was like, you'd think they'd be on there just for the fact that they're in the public domain.
Yeah,
and they just fill up the...
Yeah, Hulu, which is really cool. If you have Hulu, they have almost the entire Criterion collection in HD streaming.
Oh, wow.
So they have City Lights as a part of that. And then some of the other services have some of his films. But the only biography or documentary type thing I could find was the Attenborough Robert Downey Jr. film.
Right.
If you want to watch that.
Okay.
And a totally unrelated topic, if you want a Chaplin film.
Yeah. You might want to check PBS's website. I know that they have a bunch of American
Masters.
Yeah. They stream a lot of that stuff there for free. But anyway,
cool.
I was teasing him saying that he was brushing up on his old-timey references.
I'm working on it. I'm working my way up from the beginning.
Yeah. And then you got to drop a Mary Pickford in here somewhere.
Old-timey reference.
Yeah. And I told him that the beauty of old-timey references is that eventually you will be making them whether you want to or not.
They just come out of your mouth and you're not even aware of it. Yeah, it's like, what? How did I get in this conversation?
Yeah, at some point you're going to be talking to somebody who's half your age and you're going to be like, well, and the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies, and they're going to be like, what?
Yeah.
There was a TMNT before.
Who's Corey
the Michael
Feldman?
Yeah.
He played the voice of who?
I know.
Yeah. This is going to be like a completely alien concept.
It's going to be really weird when like Street Fighter the movie and Mortal Kombat and, you know, the original Ninja Turtles are the old-timey films.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't say classics. I just said old-timey films.
That's a subtle but important
mind
distinction.
Well, I mean, right now we've got people who are just now discovering Nirvana, and which is weird, but it's been
Sturgill Simpson actually just did a cover of what was the name of the song? But he did a cover on his country album,
a country Nirvana.
It's a country cover? Version of Nirvana. Yeah. It's very bizarre, but yeah, you have like even now people that probably wouldn't even have liked grunge back in the day, but like listen to like this Americana country music that's popular right now. And
well,
he did this like this country version. And it's
country
just
is
very
completely
bizarre.
Like country is coming around to become rock music.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I mean,
like,
in some circles, yeah, depending on the music. Sure. Yeah,
I mean, popular country.
Country kind of hit this phase where I felt like country had become the new classic rock.
Yeah,
and I felt like a lot of the classic rock people had segued over to country because classic rock stations were playing the same 300 songs over and over again.
Yeah,
and then but now country music is the new dance music.
Yeah, like kind of.
You know, it's very poppy and top 40.
Right. There's this whole pop country thing that's sweeping the nation. So you've got, you don't have a lot
kids
of this
today.
Those young whippersnappers.
Yeah. In Bloom is the name of the Nirvana song. Oh, wow. Okay. Sturgill Simpson cover.
Yeah.
Very bizarre.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. Look into it if you're into that sort of thing.
I heard Dwight Yoakam cover a Monkees song yesterday.
Did you?
He's doing his new record is, I guess, covers, and he has a version of Tomorrow's Gonna Be Another Day.
Really?
Which is like a pretty deep cut.
That's pretty deep in there.
It wasn't just like another version of I'm a Believer. No thanks. I'm good.
It would be cool to like Randy Skousgård or something like that.
That'd be good. Have you ever heard Mickey's new version of Randy Skousgård?
I have.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's like slowed down. But like that, he had a solo record out a couple years ago called Remember that is mostly, it's covers, but it's not a lazy cover album like a lot of them. They're like almost all completely new arrangements and sound very different than the originals. It's really good.
Yeah, it's good.
I think the coolest song I've heard lately that I know Michael's heard is that SOS cover that was in High Rise.
Oh, gosh, yeah. From Portishead. Portishead does a version of ABBA's SOS.
It is incredible.
In the upcoming High Rise film, which is directed by Ben Wheatley, who did A Field in England, Sightseers. He did Kill, what's the assassin film that he also directed? But anyway.
That's one starring Tom Hiddleston, and it's about a high-rise apartment that he moves into. And Portishead does this cover, which is really slowed down and kind of creepy sounding, and like it's just amazing.
It doesn't sound like ABBA at all. Right. It's a completely reinvention of the song and reinterpreting it, and so it's fun because it's not just a straight up cover. Yeah.
But the bad part about it is it's not released. It's only for the film, and they didn't release it. Really? So it's online if you can find it, but you can't even buy it if you want to, and it's incredible. Hmm. So,
well, after the Meryl Streep movie, somebody needs to reclaim ABBA for the masses. So before I forget, shameless plugs, don't forget that we are available on iTunes. You can go there, rate and review and subscribe to us. And also we have a webpage. Forget to mention that, but realspoilers.com, or I'm told that now dirtypiratehookers.com will also take you.
You know it works.
Is it up and running?
It is.
All right, good.
Yep.
So
dirtypiratehookers.com
will get you to the Real Spoilers page.
I will.
Try it out if you don't believe us. Also, you can, if you'd like to... if you have a comment about the show, want to continue the conversation online, as we say, facebook.com/realspoilers. It's also a great place where you can go and share an episode with your friends or loved ones. If you have one, you probably don't have the other. So people that shared the show this week, Librarian Cynthia, Lane Levanway, Timmy Tuzoons, Brett Chulte, Chris Sanders, Julianne Jordan, Ryan Breidenbecker, Linnea Thunsell, Travis Tewitt, Dustin at Nerds at Night Gaming, Jeff Michael. Is that a new one, Jeff Michael? Or is he... done it once or twice before.
I believe he's a new lead show share.
I thought he was. Brent Smith, Tammy Sherman Powers, Devin Kelly, or Devon. I don't know how to say that, so if I'm... feel free to correct me. That's what the page is for. Or you can email us. We all have email addresses now. So you can email any regular member of the show at their name at Real Spoilers. So Tom@RealSpoilers.com, Gevin, Dan, it's pretty self-explanatory.
Michael soon.
Yeah. No. Who knows? Probably not. He's like, I don't need another email address. So, oh, and then also Chris Sansochi shared the show. So thank you very much for doing that. It helps us tremendously, and we greatly appreciate it. So I guess we will now turn our eyes to the box office. Kevin has his abacus at the ready. Kevin.
I do, Tom, and it looks like number one was the movie of the day, so we finally got a number one.
We picked right. Woo!
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out with $32.5 million this weekend. So
I'm thinking that they're probably not happy with that.
Yeah, it's a little light, certainly.
I was going to say it's about $40 million less than the first film, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty light. It is on a $135 million budget.
I wonder if the fact that the first movie was a big steaming turd plays a role.
You know what? That might be.
But you know what? I think the first film made $200 million abroad.
Yeah.
Like, it made a big O bucks over there.
This will probably make a couple hundred million overseas too. I don't think they're going to lack on that, but domestically that's pretty light for a property that's been around, and they've had an incarnation of a cartoon or a CG type nonstop since the 90s. So
yeah,
that's pretty light.
Yeah, and it's a soft week too. It's not like it's not like there's a lot of competition out for it. I mean, because X-Men is underperforming, and then as you get down the list, the movies get less and less impressive. So
I was going to say, I would have, part of me wants to think that X-Men and Ninja Turtles would be kind of competing, for the same audience. But I also think that audience would have seen X-Men last week.
I think you also have quite a younger audience going to this Ninja Turtles film, just based on the advertising. So, going into in a couple weeks when you have Finding Dory coming out the gate, it's like this film's going to disappear in a couple weeks because the same audience that's going to go see Finding Dory, that's going to dominate.
Yeah, and we'll get into it, but it's definitely aimed at kids. And then when I watched the movie, I'm like, this is for kids.
That's how I felt about the last one.
Yeah,
I'm watching it, and I was like, this doesn't know.
Yeah, so I don't really know what they're trying to do, because you think they market it to kids.
And I don't think they know what they're trying to do.
No, it's a very mixed message, so we'll get into that one next. It's quite a bit away from its budget on this one, so we'll see what it does overseas. Number two, X-Men Apocalypse, made another $22.5 million, but that is a 66% drop. So that one is quickly dropping. It's made $116 million domestic, but they say it has a $178 million budget on the official page for the box office here, but I heard it's closer to $250.
Yikes.
So that's pretty light. But again, it made $190 million foreign already, so it's up to about $300 million worldwide. So it's making some money, but definitely underperforming when you look at the other X-Men movies that have come out that have been closer to $700 million, $800 million worldwide. So I don't think this one can get anywhere close to those previous films. So.
Well, and they had some controversy this week because I guess people were complaining about the billboard where Apocalypse is strangling.
That is one of the most frustrating things about the internet. And obviously, I don't want to go off into a huge tangent about it, but you want female action heroes, right?
Then they're going to be in danger.
Right. So
at some point.
So you can have female action heroes. You're getting more of those. Mystique takes a huge hero role in this film when she's not even an X-Men in the source material. So you make Mystique a main character. You make her a hero. She's battling Apocalypse. So you can have a female hero, but the female hero can't be in danger or be hurt. I mean, that's a really one-sided viewpoint. They're not showing a woman getting strangled. They're showing a bad guy strangling a female hero.
They're showing a supervillain battling a superhero.
Yeah, and it just happens to be a woman. So you can't have it both ways. Like, you either want,
and in the context of the movie, just whoever happened to be standing within an arm's reach.
Yeah,
refresh me, because I saw the movie a million years ago.
Sure. He grabs her.
I know the image, but my question was, does that scene actually happen in the film?
It does happen in the film.
Okay, yeah. I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was a contrivance for the billboard. I'd feel a little differently. But if it's an actual scene from the film,
and Jennifer Lawrence is one of the biggest stars in the movie. Yeah. So Jennifer Lawrence happens to be a woman. She's one of the biggest stars in the movie, and the villain is Apocalypse. I mean, I just think that,
and she's in the blue makeup in the picture. Like,
yeah,
which I think had to be a deliberate choice, because she's not she doesn't use the makeup in the movie very much.
No.
And which I get, she's one of the biggest actresses in Hollywood right now. You don't want to cover her face. You don't want to pay her that kind of money and then cover her face. But on the billboard, they opted to, because if he's strangling her without the makeup on, that visually is a very different image.
It would be very jarring to see that up there. But yeah, it's a hero in costume, and this is like full makeup costume. So I just think it's frustrating when you want to see, and I have obviously no problem with female superheroes, more women being lead characters.
Some of
films.
Your best friends are female superheroes.
That's right. I'm friends with females.
I've seen them on Facebook.
Yeah. So it's like, that's great that they're putting them in the mainstream, but that means in these type of movies, if you're going to have female leads in action movies about fighting, guns, violence that are in the movie, there are going to be scenes and there are going to be promotions where they're in danger. And
if Wonder Woman isn't allowed to hit anybody, it's just going to be Man of Steel. No, not Man of Steel. Superman Returns.
Right. Yeah, exactly. When the marketing for Wonder Woman comes out, and if there's no sense of danger, if Wonder Woman's never in peril, that's not going to make for a very exciting movie. So when the marketing for Wonder Woman comes out, how much outrage are we going to see because Wonder Woman is being hit? I mean,
or thrown around, or I've kind of wondered.
You also have to wonder if the people read that original source material, because there's a little bit different take on how they had Wonder Woman in peril back in the day.
Yeah. She was tied up an awful lot.
A lot.
A lot.
But just simply like the other side of the spectrum, like for instance, Batman vs. Superman, like whenever they advertise that film, or Civil War, you always see people standing off.
Yeah.
Like, you know, getting close to each other, ready for battle, but they're never actually like entangled, you know, with one another. So the fact that, you know, she's being physically put upon, I don't know. Yeah. I see both sides of the argument. I mean, it is silly because it's a scene from the movie, but could they have chosen a different scene of the two of them fighting, or something that isn't as like aggressively like violent?
Yeah. But hindsight's 20/20.
Of course.
They could have chosen millions of other frames from the movie too. I mean, just the fact that the outrage is around it and they did choose that, but I can totally play devil's advocate and see, you know, what they could have done better. But I just think it's a little silly. But a lot of these, like, I think it's great, all these movements, again, for women action heroes, women leads in films, and that's fantastic that we're seeing that, and hopefully Black Widow will have a movie soon. Wonder Woman's coming out. You've got all these different female superheroes.
Harley
movies.
Quinn might have her own solo film coming out.
Well, I think that's for sure. She's going to be like the head of the DC. Yeah. Like, they're really pushing that hard. So that is fantastic. But that means that we're going to see a lot more.
Well, that actress has already came out and said, like, if there's a Harley Quinn movie, she's like, I'm not wearing these shorts again. I'll tell you that. Really? She, like, was not happy with that outfit. Maybe it wasn't shorts, but it was whatever they had her in. She was just like,
oh, yeah, she was in, like, a crop top.
Yeah,
and crop
shorts. Exactly. Yeah. Shorts, yeah. And she's just like, yeah, that's not going to be a thing.
Huh. Okay.
Good. Yeah.
It is what it is.
Sure.
You know, the internet flying off the rails, that never happens.
I've wondered for years, though, when we'd start seeing this, as you see more female superheroes in movies, well, they engage with the male superheroes as equals.
Right.
And
they're equals. Exactly.
Right.
So.
But it always builds up to fisticuffs. And so then what's going to, you know, at some point you have men superheroes hitting female superheroes or supervillains or whatever.
If Apocalypse was holding up Wolverine on the billboard, would there be one cry of outrage? I get that we're not.
But I think the other side would say, as Michael pointed out, but we haven't seen that image, have we?
Yeah. I mean,
is there an equivalent with Wolverine?
I don't know. I mean, we've always seen like villains and heroes facing, like, about to face off or
in an advertisement.
Not in the film, of course.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, they get choked. Quicksilver, Apocalypse beats the crap out of Quicksilver, right? So what if Mystique was the one that Apocalypse was beating the crap out of in a movie? Why would it be fair to have Mystique be a main character but not be handled the same way as Quicksilver? You know what I mean? Like, Apocalypse isn't going to be a gentleman and not fight Mystique,
right? I think
within
the context of the story, it makes sense, you know, the scene with Apocalypse and Mystique. But again, it just goes back to the advertising. You're promoting a film using a said image. And so, I don't know.
I get both sides,
I
too. It's just frustrating because we're only going to see more. And I guess it's difficult that the studios have to be so one-sided, like, and be so careful about it, yet they're trying to even the playing field. So it's like, it just seems a little uneven.
I just look at it as just generally bad design. I'm looking at the design and like, that's just a lousy, like, screen grab. It's not even, you know, I've been so frustrated with, I mean, and what we call backvertising, because like every movie poster now has leaned into this whole got to show them from the back. And if you, I mean, you look, just look up backvertising on the Googles, and it's just so, ever since like Unforgiven, the movie poster for that, and then look at how many design, you know, how many times the marketing departments are basically just cribbing off of the same look. Like, we got to show them from the back. It's got to be somber. They got to be looking down. And it goes on and on and on and on. And it's just this laziness. And this is like even lazier, because there's no design to it. It's just like a shot from the movie.
Right. So, they didn't.
So it offends me on multiple levels.
Yeah. They should have, if they're really going to do good advertising, they should have had a still photographer actually set up a photo shoot for the movie and do something creative instead of photoshopping a scene out. You're right. I mean, it's not
or
clever.
Make a better movie.
Yeah.
Well, there's, let's not go crazy.
Yeah. I mean, come on. There's only so much budget. I mean, $250 million
you got to draw a line somewhere.
Right. So anyway, X-Men doing all right overseas, but it will be fizzling out here pretty soon in the domestic. Me Before You opened to $17.5 million this weekend, so that's the new Khaleesi film.
Did she get naked in it? Does she have dragons?
Did you see it, Tom?
I think, as evidenced by the fact that it came in third, I would have to say no.
Yeah, neither.
It has neither, neither of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, so it made a couple million foreign, but it's around $20 million on a $20 million budget, so it doesn't have a huge budget to make up, but I don't know, might make a few more bucks in its box office run. I did not see it. Okay.
No.
And number four, The Angry Birds Movie came in at $10.7 million, a 43% drop in week three. That is now sitting at $87 million. It's made another $155 million overseas, though. So it's up over $235 million worldwide on a $73 million budget.
Huh.
Well, it's a lot of money.
They figured all they did was look at like the calendar of releases and go, well, can we just put this in the calendar to have some money for a little while between a DreamWorks or a Disney Pixar.
Yeah,
or
before Finding Dory.
Right.
Yeah.
And did you hear the next project that's been greenlit with the success of Angry Birds? This is no joke.
Fruit Ninja?
Fruit Ninja, the movie, has been greenlit.
Plants vs. Zombies, that's got to be close, right? That's on its way, right?
That seems like the most logical next movie.
Yeah, zombies.
I would see it.
Yeah.
The thing is, with Fruit Ninja, you are the ninja. So, like with Angry Birds, you see the characters on the screen.
Maybe it's going to be
Fruit Ninja. It's just going to be your figure.
It's going to be all POV, like that.
Just all figure.
Like that. What was it? That Henry movie or whatever? What was it?
Yeah.
Hardcore Henry.
Yeah. Or that, like, 5 minutes of the Doom movie. Yeah.
And have you heard of the epic sci-fi thriller, also based on a video game property that's coming out? Tetris.
Ugh.
Do you know what the budget is on the Tetris movie?
Don't tell me this. That'll make me sad.
You know, any guesses? What's the budget on Tetris?
$120 million.
I'm going to say $140.
Take my life, please.
You guys actually overshot it, but not by much. $80 million on the Tetris movie, helmed by the director of Mortal Kombat.
Paul W.S. Anderson?
I'm sorry. Maybe it's...
You got me way too excited
Maybe
for
it's
that.
The producer. Sorry, Larry Kazanoff.
All right.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sorry. No, not... Yeah, that would be...
I was like, what he's doing?
No. Is he the... I always get him mixed up. He's not the one that did the Underworld movies, is he?
No, that's Len Wiseman.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's married to Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just thinking because of that action genre. I don't know why I always think it's him. Tetris.
Okay. I mean, they're still... I mean, they did the Battleship movie... And I
know, but Tetris with falling blocks. How can you possibly convert Tetris?
I don't know.
What story?
Aliens are attacking us with falling blocks. There, I wrote your movie.
There you go.
That's what's going to be. You know what it's going to be.
It's going to be like Pixels.
Yeah.
I know. Do you think that had some influence?
Get Charlie Hunnam in there. Throw in maybe another...
what's his name? Taylor Kitsch. Yeah,
Taylor Kitsch and Taylor Lautner.
The Taylors, a Taylor two pack.
two Taylors.
You heard it here first.
Yeah,
T2.
So anyway, we have those to look forward to. So get your apps ready. You buy them before they go up in price. Number five, Alice Through the Looking Glass, dropping in number five with $10.5 million, a 61% drop from an abysmal opening. The movie is at $50.5 million total domestic now.
Whoops.
That cannot be close to what they're looking for on a $170 million budget.
That still isn't enough to make them happy with opening weekend.
No, I mean, like, I mean,
that was probably their catering budget,
yeah,
for
yeah.
on the film, or
Johnny Depp's
wardrobe budget.
I mean, seriously, the movie has a $170 million budget, and it's only made $70 million overseas. Which this is one that you're like, okay, it's going to make some money overseas.
That's not good.
It's at $112 million worldwide. That's
oof.
And I mean, it got terrible reviews. Tom, you said it was just boring.
It was just boring.
So I would have never thought. I mean, did I think it was going to be good? No, but I never thought it would flop.
I don't think the last one was good.
No, not at all.
I mean, I feel like it's one of those movies. Like, there are these movies that come out sometimes and they make a lot of money, but excuse me, but there's no passion for them,
right?
And I think the studios need to get better at knowing when they've kind of gamed the system and not going back to that well. And I think Clash of the Titans was a good example of that.
God,
there should have never been a second one. Be glad you got out on the first one.
Yeah.
You got lucky. You didn't create a fan base. Like, you just happened to release a movie at the exact right moment.
It was like the right week.
Right.
Like, literally, and down to like, okay.
And I get that it's harder to say that about the first Alice in Wonderland movie because it made like $1 billion worldwide.
It did. It had a $200 million budget and made over $1 billion in theater alone. So,
yeah.
I mean, not to mention home video, merchandising. It made
a ton
of money.
I just don't feel like there's any passion for the property.
I don't think I've seen it since theaters. It wasn't very good.
Yeah. I mean, the closest I've come to seeing it is every time you walk in Costco, they were using to show you how great their HDTVs
right, yeah.
were. Because they're like, look at all the colors. But beyond that,
it's a good demo disc.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's about it.
But yeah, I just, with the original making that much money, I would have never imagined it. I mean, it could end its box office run under $200 million, which would just be crazy with
global.
The other one. Worldwide, it could end its box office with $200 million. Or, something around that. And the original made, not the original, the last one made over $1 billion. That's...
What was the budget on this new one?
170.
But with marketing and all
the,
that.
The production
sure,
budget was
just 170.
The production,
yeah. But with marketing, I wouldn't be surprised if Disney loses like $100 million on this project.
Well, yeah, and especially on paper, I'm sure they will. Because you got to think about it. Remember, the box office accounts for a third, or they get like, when it's all said and done, maybe a third or half of that money. So if it's if it's sitting at $130 million, they're gonna make 70-80 million of that if that's where it ends. And then you've got 170 budget plus marketing, which they usually just say double it. So if they've got $400 million sunk into this movie and they've recouped $100 million at the box office, they've got to make up $300 million on home video and toys to break even. So that's a flop.
Still doing better than Mars Needs Moms.
That's I don't even know what happened there. That's just crazy. So number six, Captain America Civil War. Talk about the other side of the spectrum. Luckily this is the same company.
They're gonna need it.
Captain America Civil War in week five made another $8.2 million. That's only a 47% drop in week five. $389 million domestic. Overseas, $733 million. It is at over $1.1 billion on a $250 million budget.
Isn't it weird that we're like now sort of like on a at least a monthly basis talking about $1 billion movies?
Yeah,
it really is, because if you looked at the box office 10 years ago, I mean, look back 10 years ago, which isn't that long, a decade passed, and movies weren't making anywhere close to that.
No. And it's just that we're just like, it's starting to be a fairly common
thing. Now, if you haven't hit a billion, you're like, that movie made some money, but it wasn't
okay.
Right? We're $1 billion.
When was the first Avatar out? Was that 70 years
ago? I'm sorry. What's
that? Was it like 7 years ago, 8 years ago?
It was 2009, right? Was Avatar 2009?
Because that's what I was trying to think about, like when you said, like, think about like 10 years ago. But okay.
But
so
that was I mean, think about Titanic was 97 and that made $1 billion. So like those are the anomalies for sure.
Oh, for sure.
But now we expect $1 billion movie every month, which is just crazy that there's that much movie. And I guess maybe that's a sign of the time that more people are going to the movies to.
Yeah. I think it's a sign that the international market has matured. That they've developed that market. And when I say matured, like, economically, they've developed that market.
Distribution, digital. Now that it's digital distribution, I mean, think about it. If you had to send 1,000 reels of film overseas, shipping, the logistics of running it and having the proper equipment and sound and everything would be a nightmare. But when you have digital projection set up and they can download the file and
And I think that's what's really changed the game is that, you know, you can push these movies out to the foreign markets now in ways that you couldn't previously.
You know what? There's a new paradigm in cinema. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Cinedime.
Cinedime. Yeah.
I saw something funny that was sort of in memoriam of James Cameron's. It was sort of in memoriam of James Cameron. I was like, oh my God, what? And then it was like, oh, it was because he's not going to make any more original movies ever again because he's so wrapped up in this Avatar.
Right.
Three more. It's like, so like, and it was talking about movies like The Abyss and True Lies and like movies like you forget that he did and then that are not even out on Blu-ray.
Right. Yeah.
Because he won't concentrate on doing those because he's so fixated on Avatar. It's like even his past sort of like standalone films are like he's forgotten about.
And True Lies is so good, too.
And it's
that
so
deserves
good. We
to
don't
be on Blu-ray.
Get to like and people like he's abandoned his own history because he's fixated on Avatar.
It's too bad. And obviously the guy is a brilliant director. He's a mastermind when it comes to technology.
Yes.
Back to, you know, T2 and revolutionizing special effects.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's been amazing with revolutionizing the cameras and the special effects work. But yeah, he's just going to focus on Avatar. And I mean, are we all on the same page here that Avatar wasn't even a good movie? It was a technologically cool movie for 3D, but it's not a great film.
Yeah. I have to wonder if it, I can't even imagine watching it now and how bad a lot of it's going to come off because, you know, it's
we've
one of those things that, like,
3D now.
We've seen good 3D. We've good, like, the CGI. I mean, it's just like when you watch the prequel trilogy for Star Wars and you're like, whoa, the CGI is so bad.
Right.
In it. And I think there's going to be a lot of that. And I also think that the story was pretty threadbare before.
Yeah. I mean, it's
Dances with Wolves, but it's okay.
No, I mean, that's the thing. The story has been told five times before. It's like, it wasn't an original story. It wasn't very good. But you know what? It was right place, right time.
Uh-huh.
In 2009, to have that type of 3D and that type of special effects, like, people ate it up. But look at it now after we've been inundated with 3D films. I mean, it's not going to hold up. And the story certainly isn't going to wow you. So they'll have to do something really spectacular with the next three movies. Hopefully they're not just going to crib from other stories and remake them.
Yeah.
But then again, look at Hollywood and the downward spiral of remakes. There are tons of remakes coming out. And I swear in the last week, there's been like five more remakes announced. That's all they're doing. So now they're going to remake The Count of Monte Cristo. That's all they're doing is just remaking original properties.
When they're spending this much money, they need a built-in audience.
Yeah, but you know
it's
what?
It's scary to create something from scratch spend like $200 million to do it.
Like, it seems like we should be on, a three-year cycle for a remake of Three Musketeers. It's usually like every 3 years. There's like a Three Musketeers with whoever the hottest
There's going to be another Robin Hood soon, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ben-Hur is coming out with Jack Huston.
There's another Tarzan film coming out, I think, next month.
Right. Alexander
Skarsgård.
Yeah. Who, I mean, he definitely he looks the role for sure. No, and the tone of the movie looks good. But yeah, remake.
Another Jungle Book.
Yeah,
still.
You know what?
Yeah, sequel and another one.
Yeah.
And a whole other version of it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's just kind of crazy. But I get it. When original properties come out, they're hit or miss. But I think people are going to get sick of the remakes, and they're going to start seeing a huge drop off in those, too. So we'll see where it goes. Number 7, Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping, made $5 million.
So it stopped.
Yeah, it never stopped. It stopped never stopping.
Yeah. It never started not never stopping.
And you saw it, Tom?
I did.
And?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was intermittently funny. Like, I wish it had been funnier than it was. It always held my interest. I was never bored. It's really short. It's like an hour and 25 minutes or something. You know, but I think its biggest mistake is that... You know, typically stories are three acts, and this is two acts, and they skipped the first one, which made the payoff of the third act kind of ineffectual. And I know that sounds weird because you're like, it's a dumb comedy. Who cares about the payoff? But Lonely Island plays what were they called? The Style Boys or something. It was kind of like a cross between like 98 Degrees and the Beastie Boys. And then... They have this rise to fame. They break up, and then Andy Samberg's character goes solo. And he's kind of their Justin Timberlake and has a big, huge record. And then his new record comes out, and it tanks. And it's like a mockumentary, and they're following him as his kind of kingdom starts to crumble. And of course, it all leads up to a reunion of the Style Boys, and he realizes the value of friendship and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And but you never really got the build up on the Style Boys. It kind of starts. That's all in like a 5-minute montage at the beginning of, you know, of very exposition heavy. And it was like, I really think they should have trimmed some of the middle and made their movie like an hour and maybe, if it had been maybe 15 minutes longer, so you could have got that kind of to see the Style Boys in action before, you know, if you look at the Shakespearean writing peak of, you know, the rise and fall, and there's this moment and it all hinges around that. Like you kind of start at that moment and then watch the fall. You never really get
the rise.
And
right. So when they get back together, there's no real payoff.
Yeah.
You
didn't
feel like,
oh, I'm so glad that this, you know, it,
I like the Lonely Island. I mean,
so the songs are really funny. Like there, like I said, there are some very funny moments in the movie. Yeah. And there's a lot of like just kind of like let's keep moving.
Yeah. Gotcha.
It's This Is Spinal Tap rockumentary.
Well, what is?
Yeah,
really. What is? Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's the gold standard.
They're chasing it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it certainly follows a lot of the same beats of that. But yeah.
And the funny thing about that in hindsight is that that was just a complete anomaly. I mean, that wasn't anything. And I think, you know, as they were making the movie, it was like I don't think they were like, man, this is gonna, people are gonna love this movie. I mean, it's an odd movie, and especially odd for the time that movie came out. It's like a lot of people didn't even know it was fake.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. It feels like almost too real.
Yeah,
that film, like when you watch it and their conversations and everything, like they're so in character and they're so like in the moment. And not trying to be funny, but it just comes off as like ridiculous and funny.
Well, did that star anyone famous at the time?
I mean, Rob Reiner.
Yeah.
Was
Rob Reiner had been, you know, was on All in the Family. So, yeah. I mean, that was a huge sitcom.
Michael McKean.
McKean had been part of, was on Laverne and Shirley, which was another huge sitcom.
I'm just trying to think. I was wondering if there was disconnect. Like when you see Andy Samberg, and he's a funny guy, but you're going to see Andy Samberg.
Right. Yeah, I will say that, like, as somebody who grew up watching Laverne and Shirley, we had three channels. You just back off. It was like Laverne and Shirley or Heart to Heart. You pick Laverne and Shirley. Right. You made the same goddamn choice.
I would have.
Don't you judge me. But but if somebody grew up watching Laverne and Shirley, like when I watch Spinal Tap, at no point in time was I like, oh, it's Lenny.
Right.
You know, like I
it didn't take you out of it.
No, I mean, because he looked so different. He sounded so different. Like, I mean, you really, like, I mean, I remember watching going, is that Lenny?
Right.
Like, that's Lenny from Lenny and Squiggy.
You know,
that's
what? So you're right. Nowadays, you have the internet. You have all media, you know, whether it's streaming, television, cable, the internet. And so you have so much exposure where, you know, every time Justin Bieber pees in a bucket, you know about it, right?
Yeah.
But you had three channels, and so you could catch him, you know, once a week or whenever it aired if you happened to be on one of those channels. So you're not exposed to celebrity as much, so they're just not a part of your family. Like,
but you could also do something back then that you can't do today, which is you could have these little things get made that you could discover and feel like you were the only one that knew about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's like, I remember the first time I saw Spinal Tap and then like, you know, having friends over and, be like,
and it was hard to find.
Yeah.
Because,
dude, we got to see Spinal Tap. And they're like, what are you talking about?
It wasn't a wide release. And then when it was on video, it wasn't a popular video. So like to even find a copy, either, you know, like at the rental store, like that is like, it just happened to have it. It wasn't like something that was readily accessible.
Yeah. It wasn't like one of the movies you walked in, they had seven copies.
Right.
Of it. They had one.
Yeah.
That's disappointing about Popstar. I don't actually have a budget on it. So, you know, it's made $5 million. What do you think? I mean, did it seem like a very high production value, or was it just a bunch of guys with a camera?
I mean,
like
it had good production value.
I mean, all their stuff looks good.
Yeah.
Lonely Island makes,
I mean,
film-looking,
I don't think they
video.
Probably spent more than 30 on it, maybe.
Okay.
I wouldn't think. But, right. I mean, the only thing I think probably cost some money is there was a lot of, like, concert footage.
$20 million. I just found it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's not too bad.
One, wasn't there a lot of celebrity cameos as
well?
Yeah,
it was
Friends.
Clearly, but if you know the people involved, you can, you know,
call in a favor. Hey, we need you for an hour.
These are SNL guys. I mean, especially Andy Samberg and the other two wrote for SNL. So it's like, you know, Tim Meadows is going to come to your movie and whoever else is going to come to your
Tim
movie.
Meadows is
Tim Meadows will come.
Because he's in it, right?
Yeah, Tim Meadows will come
to your movie, right?
Yeah. He'll come to your garage sale.
Yeah, he was in it, right?
He's like a running coach now. You know, he's got nothing else to do.
But yeah, like Justin Timberlake is in it. I think we all know how Andy Samberg wrangled that, and Jimmy Fallon pops up, and then you get Questlove. So you know, it's all most of the cameos. Right. It's pretty obvious how they got them.
Sure. So yeah, with a $20 million budget, I mean, if it sticks around for a couple weeks and does video, I mean,
I think their biggest expense was renting all the arenas in which they filmed those scenes.
Yeah, I mean, so they're really playing in like a Madison Square Garden
or
something.
If that's green screen, it was really good. It really looked like they were in arenas,
or they're piggybacking something else.
They show up at the tail end or before a concert, or
but
something.
That's still not cheap to shoot.
No, not at all.
I know.
Yeah,
you got to rent it, and then you got to, you know. But yeah, I mean, with Justin Timberlake, maybe they were like, hey, can we want it? You know,
yeah.
You know what? I bet they could. They could tag onto that, and they could probably not even charge them. And
yeah, you'd still need it for an extra day, though.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, because if Timberlake's doing a show, they're probably loading in at like 7 o'clock in the morning. They're spending all day building that set and they're building that stage.
What about a 2-day show?
I don't think he's doing 2-day shows.
Yeah,
I don't think.
I gotcha.
I don't know that he's. I'm not trying to say Justin Timberlake isn't big,
but for an arena,
I don't know that he's. Yeah. There aren't a lot of 2-day arena artists.
No,
like,
true.
Stick around for a second day.
I mean, there's Taylor Swift and Beyonce's doing NFL stadiums.
Yeah,
and
Yeah, who knows? That's interesting. Number 8, Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising, made another $4.8 million. That's a 49% drop in week 3. That is now up to $48.6 million. But overseas, that one actually has made 36, which again is surprising still for an American comedy. So over $82 million worldwide on that one. Again, I don't have a budget on that, but I can't imagine it's a huge budget.
I bet it's probably under $50
million,
I would guess.
But you know, I think it's deserving. It's a funny movie. Did you see it, Michael?
I loved it.
I loved the first one. I thought the first one was really funny. And, you know, some of these comedies can be hit or miss, especially the Zac Efron ones, like Dirty Grandpa, terrible. But Neighbors was really funny, and I loved this movie. It was laugh out loud funny. So
I think people back pocket these because they don't need to see them in a theater.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, they're like, I mean, there's enough spectacle that something like this, it's like you kind of hold on to.
Sure. Just,
you know.
Yeah, you can watch a comedy on Netflix. Yeah. Hey, and in your bedroom on your second generation TV that's this small. Yeah, like, you don't have to necessarily see it on the big screen.
No.
Yeah.
Although I will say there's something about seeing it with a crowd and having
agree.
Laughter.
Yeah, I agree.
I do. I think comedies.
I suppose if you like people.
Touche.
Well, that's if you have a crowd of like a decent crowd of people that are there to watch the movie, but sometimes you get the crowd for these comedies that are on their cell phone, taking calls, playing Angry Birds in the front row.
Yeah. Now, what if you're at Angry Birds and they're playing Angry Birds?
You have an Inception moment at that point.
Yeah. Then you look around you and there's the red bird is in the seat next to you. And you're just like, what's happening?
Waiting for that top to fall.
Yeah.
It's going. No.
Number 9, The Jungle Book, still around.
Dang.
In the top 10, $4.7 million, a 34% drop in week 8. $347.9 million domestic, wait for it, $543 million overseas. So it's up to almost $900 million worldwide on a $175 million budget.
That shows you how weak the caliber of children's films are out there. Not that that's not a great movie, but that
week 8 it can be
that
in the
it's
top
still
10.
Making that kind of money this deep in, it's because everything else that's out there is just not that good. Because
at this point, Disney would normally be planning or pushing the home video release or the inevitable, you know, video release. And they're not even talking about that.
No. Whereas like Batman v Superman, I mean, I know that was out a few months earlier, but still like that's coming out next month because it needs to make up the money. But these movies, I mean, think about Zootopia.
Yeah.
Zootopia is sticking around. I mean, it's finally out of the top 10, but it comes out next week and it's been in the top 10.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, so I mean that's insane. Zootopia now has exited the top 10 after 14 weeks and comes out next week. So
just the right time,
right? So it was perfect for them. But you know what's amazing? If you look at it, I mean, sure, Disney has a miss with Alice Through the Looking Glass, but number 5 is Alice, number 6 is Captain America, number 9 is Jungle Book, and Zootopia just exited. So what a year for Disney!
Yeah.
Already, and it's only halfway over.
Yeah.
Rounding up the top 10, The Nice Guys came in with $3.2 million, a 51% drop in week 3. Unfortunately, that one's only at $28.8 million domestic.
It amazes me that you have two of the biggest Hollywood names in a film together, and the film did nothing. And it generated no sparks,
you know,
no interest.
They're like, well-known, but when's the last time either one of those two have opened a film?
That's true. I mean, Ryan Gosling does do more of the supporting role.
Yeah.
Usually. I mean, he does. Yeah. It's not well,
Banner. I like him. I'm a large film. A Banner film.
No, yeah, no, sure. I mean, Drive was amazing.
Right.
But I mean, mainstream or blockbuster, you're right. You don't really see it. You know, Crazy Stupid Love was great, but it had an ensemble cast.
And, right.
Gangster Squad was another one where he was a sub-character within a larger cast.
Exactly. So that's
and it wasn't really a hit.
No you, that one was a bomb.
But it is a bit of a strange thing, though, because you're right, Michael. Everyone who saw the trailer thought it looked hilarious. I did not talk to one person who saw the trailer and was like, "Eh." Everyone goes, "That movie looks awesome."
Yeah.
And so I don't know.
Back pocket.
Yeah, maybe.
Say again later.
Comedies, maybe. Maybe it will do good on home video. And it was a good movie. I mean, I enjoyed it. Right? I mean, I think everyone enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, but I didn't love it. Not like I thought I was going to. Well, certainly based on Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
With it.
Yeah.
The expectations. Sure.
Yeah. I wanted more out of it.
But
I enjoyed it, but it's not like, oh, I can't wait to see it again.
Oh, sure.
I was just kind of like, oh, I wish it would have been just
right
further.
I felt like a middle school English teacher.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're my favorite student, but this is not your best work.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you can do better.
Yeah.
I thought it just had this really mean sort of spirited to it where, you know, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and some of his other films, like even though they tackle some darker themes, like they aren't so overtly negative. Like here, you know, it's like, oh, marriage sucks. Oh, the government sucks. Oh, the porn is. I mean, it felt like this like drunk, angry guy at the end of the bar, like raging about everything that was wrong with the 70s. Oh, protesters, like, you know, they're protesting about silly stuff. I mean, it was just.
Oh, it felt like Jodie Foster financial movie.
It was very nihilistic to me.
That's true.
I mean, and that was my biggest beef with the film. I thought the trailers were very funny, and that's the. I was expecting more of an overt comedy, and this felt like this angry, nihilistic drunk guy at the end of a bar.
True, yeah, that could take away from the comedy for sure.
Yeah.
So that's the box office.
Okay, well, thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
I guess let's go around the tables and everybody can say where to find them.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter at DanGraney67, GRANEY.
This is Michael. You can find me also on Twitter at MPHaffner, HAFFNER.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Don't forget, if you would like to continue the conversation online, we will be there waiting for you at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers or on Twitter at Real Spoilers. You can email the show at RealSpoilers@ReviewSTL.com or you can email us individually at Tom@RealSpoilers.com, Dan@RealSpoilers.com, Kevin@RealSpoilers, or Joe@Real. There.
But not me.
But now you know. Now you feel all left out.
No, it's all right.
This is an awkward moment. I shouldn't have done that. And don't forget, we're also available on iTunes where you can go there, rate and review and subscribe and join. And, well, League of Show Shares is Facebook. I'm all spun around. I'm still tired from the move. Can you tell? So, that's it for this episode. Coming up on the next one, we will tackle Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Thank God there are four of us. We can each take a turtle.
I get Leonardo.
I'm not tackling Raphael.
Which one's the slowest? That's the one I probably should tackle.
Donatello, probably.
You
got Michelangelo.
Yeah.
I'm going to give Raphael.
I don't want Raphael.
You're pretty buff.
He's like two times larger than the other one.
Yeah.
All right.
You know what? You tackle two of the turtles, and I'll tackle April.
Ew.
That's not fair.
Sorry. I'm the one who thought of it. You should have been quicker.
You might have to push Brian Austin Green out of the way, but okay.
So, yeah. I thought she already pushed him out of the way.
Yeah, well, still having his babies.
Oh, how about that?
Just have an agreement.
What a beautiful way to say I love you.
Yeah. I'll take your baby.
So that will be coming up on the next episode of Real Spoilers. Until then, you've been warned.
We're learning the music, we're finding the code, yeah. And we can practice it, we're staying underground. The singing in the sewer is a wonderful sound. Out of our shell.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.